introduction. Okay? All right.
I was going to tell you a few little things to start with, but go ahead.
Well, you can tell me all you want. My name is Teresa Osborne, and I'm here for the Oral History, Kentucky Oral History Commission, and I'm speaking to Mr. Bluford Buddy Smith of Hi Hat, Kentucky. Is that correct? Okay, and the date today is September the 29th. Is that correct? And it's about 2:30 in the afternoon in Mr. Smith's home. Now, what were you going to tell me about?
Well, if you're going to start at the beginning, no need me to tell you these things till the time comes in.
All righty.
Anyway, you wanted sort of a history to start with.
Where were you born?
Well, my family were coal miners.
Mm-hmm.
And we followed the coal mining camps. I lived in several mining camps up through West Virginia. I was born at Big Creek, West Virginia. That's just close to Chapmansville, about 12 miles north of Logan, West Virginia. My father was a mine foreman for different mining companies, and back in 31, back Depression years, all the mines in this country shut down, all over the country. So our mines shut down over in West Virginia, and my dad came over and him and his company and bought the coal mines at Ligon and Garrett, Kentucky. And I being the oldest one of the family, was just 17 in our family.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was the oldest boy, and I had to go to work early. So when I was 12 years old, my dad took me to mines at Ligon. The mines shut down for about 3 months, and I helped pump in the mines. I run a motor in the mines and took care of the pump. My father and I were the only two working at the time. I was there about 3.5 months. And later, when I was 14 years old, we moved from Ligon to Hi Hat and put in new mines here, and I started to work the mines in. I was 14 years old. I walked from Ligon down here 4 miles. I walked 4 miles, worked 9 hours a day, and walked back home.
Oh, goodness.
Got all of 30 cents an hour. It was $2.70 a day. Hey?
So. When were you born?
I was born December 19th, 1922.
Okay. All righty. So, where did you go to? Did you get to go to school?
I went to grade school somewhat in West Virginia, I think. I was in the third grade or something when we moved over. I was 9 years old when I came here, this part of the country. And I worked in the mines and went to school. Our schools were 7 months long, and I worked 5 months in the mines each year from the time I was 14 years old.
Oh, goodness.
And then when I, and in 37, I finished my fifth grade in high school, and my fifth grade here at Hi Hat, and I finished the sixth grade here, and I walked a wheelwright that for school started in July, and 7 months is up in January, so I got my report card 2 weeks early, and I walked 6.5 miles a wheelwright and took the seventh grade.
Mm. Now, did you do that every day?
I did that. I walked up and back every day and then when at the end of that I worked about 2 months, something like that, in the mines until the grade school started again here. And I took the eighth grade then, 1 month, and walked down to Price. There wasn't no roads, you remember that back then.
Mm-hmm.
The creek was the road out of here up to Wheelwright and back down to McDowell. They started running the bus, and it's building a new road from McDowell up to Hi Hat in in 38, and I walked to Price and started in the first year. I stuck, finished the, I fit the 6th, 7th, and the 8th all 1 year and started first year high school.
My goodness.
Then I went in, when that was over, I went to Moorhead and took a summer term and come back, and so I was 3.5 years in high school.
Oh, good.
Graduated from high school. I was in college. I had a half year of college when I graduated from high school. And I had another year, and then in December the 7th in 41, the Jap bombed Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I finished my semester. It was about 2 more weeks, and then I left there and I worked in the mines 2 months and then joined the Army Signal Corps.
Okay. So you joined, did they have draft back then?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
But I knew I was going to have to go to the Army I'd been cannon fodder, but no education as far as the military was concerned. So I joined the Army Signal Corps and went to Lexington Signal Depot. Finished that and shipped me to Dayton, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
working for American Airlines. When the Army confiscated all of the ham radio in the United States, brought them to Dayton, Ohio, put them in a warehouse, and I worked there, took the radios, the ham radios. And then we were rebuilding them and had to draw the schematic diagrams and catalog all the parts for them and ship them out on the islands to be used for relay stations for the Air Force.
Okay.
I stayed there, and in the fall of 70...
You mean my dog ain't interrupt you?
Fall of 42.
Mm-hmm.
I had a warrant officer rating. A warrant officer in the Army is a civilian, so I had a chance to resign or go on into the regular Army.
Mm-hmm.
And the Army allowed me to come home. See, so I put, and they told me, said, "Now you can go home." I just gotten married, I said, and said you can go home if you wish, but we would tell you go on in the Army. If you don't, we will have you back here in 2 weeks. We'll turn you into the draft board, and you'll be back in 2 weeks if you go home. So I said, well, I don't know where I'm going to be for the next 2-4 years in the Army. There's a big war going on, so I will go home. So I got to stay home until January. 63. I went back to work in the mines until January 63. And the Army sent my draft in. I drafted me back into the Army. And they sent me to Louisiana. I had finished the FM radio course in the Signal Corps. When Patton went into North Africa, the British was getting the socks beat off of them, so Patton sent out and they picked up some of their vehicles to see what was going on. Every time they'd have a storm, the British, Germans would attack the British, and the British was getting socks beat off of them. So Patton picked up these vehicles, took the radios out, sent them to Bell Laboratories. Bell Laboratories checked them, said it's nothing but FM radio that was invented in the United States in 1926.
Hmm.
Hitler picked up on it and used them, static-free radios, and the British had nothing but static. So they sent the radios back to the British, the German radios, and one that they had built and replaced it with, they sent them to the Signal Depot at Avon, where I was stationed, and I was in the first FM radio class that was ever given in the United States. There was 18 of us in class. They'd sent some of their instructors up to Bell Laboratories, and when they came back, they started this FM class, and I was in that. So since I had finished the FM classes, I was authorized to work on FM radio. The National Guard units had been activated and put in the Army during World War II, you see, so that the National Guard from Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, Chicago, South Chicago, and Springfield, the three units, they put them together, sent them to Louisiana to train. Down there, they took their horses and their horse-drawn cavalry, and they took their horses away and gave them armored cars, half tracks, and tanks, and what have you. So the Army sent me, they actually sent the draft for me, and they sent me back then to Louisiana to install the radios in the tanks. So I stayed there with them all during the war then, see.
Mm-hmm.
I was their radio repairman and what have you for the rest of the war. Mm-hmm. So I went overseas with them to England, and I went in the invasion of France twice. I went in, they put me on the troop ship and going in the invasion, and the ship I was on was either torpedoed or some say it was a mine, some say it's torpedoes, whatever, but there was four ships hit at the same time. It was on these old Liberty ships, which is slow tubs, and the convoy from England had run off and left us. We started out the first day, and we wound up behind, so we went back in the second, started us in front the next time with the second convoy. So we wound up, before we got in, about 2 hours off the coast of France, all these slow ships were behind, but they hit four of them. Well, I had they run a Red Cross ship up beside of it. The one I was on didn't sink completely. They had locks in it in the back end that went under the water, so they we had to jump off of that one onto the Red Cross ship. Was going bringing some wounded men back from France, and so they took us back to England. And 10 days later, we had new equipment and shipped us back in again. Mm-hmm. That time we went in on a LST landing ship tanks, and pause the thing a while.
Okay, just 1 second here.
If that's what you want now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long story if you want it.
We sure want it.
Well.
Yeah. Let's see. Where's the pause?
Leave it pause there until I get my breath.
Okay.
In the meantime, right here, picture of my troop. And
there you are.
C.F. Smith and Bluford Buddy Smith. Right.
Okay. That should let us keep going.
That was taken at the end of the war. That was our troops. So that's his. I've got a history book. That picture's in a history book.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Who's the little dog?
That was our mascot.
Oh, okay.
We went to Paris on a pass, and he bought that dog and brought it back with him.
Hmm.
Little dog. That was everybody's dog. But that was at the end of the war. That right there, you're getting the story ahead of.
Okay, but I was just going to write this down. What the troop was.
anyway, some story about the invasion part. They put us on the LST. So told us, now, whatever you do, don't set the brakes on your vehicles. So my vehicle was set on the top deck. Everybody else's was down in the hole. And so people lolling around on it. Somebody pulled the emergency brake back on it. So I was the last one off aboard ship. And we pulled up. We sat outside. And in fact, the story, we went into to France, because got in at night. They got the Germans. We went off, got to sort of lost from the convoy, and we went up a cove on the German territory, and the German speedboat came out to visit us, and they turned the ship around when they saw us coming back out, and sat then out when they went on up the beach ways, sat outside the beach until the tide come back in, so all we could see all the everything was going on the beach. So when tide come in, run up on the beach, our drawbars open, everybody debarked the thing, pulled out, and by that time we was several weeks late from the, we wasn't in the first wave, in other words. Mm-hmm. And I was, rest of my outfit had made the beach, was 2 weeks before I did, because we had gone back to England and got new equipment and put on a different boat. So as I come off the boat, I was the last man off, and their Jeep hit down in the water where the boat had raised back up somewhat, and the man on the that guiding everybody off had jumped on the back of my Jeep, and when it hit, he came tumbling over the front and hit his head against the dashboard on the Jeep, split his head open, knocked him out. So the two of us, that was the first incident we had of another second, because we had several men was killed on the boat when it went down. And you don't need this little details about that. Anyway, that's taking up your time, I guess.
Oh, anything that you want to tell us?
Okay, this is my entrance to the invasion.
Mm-hmm.
So I drove the Jeep out, got out of that, started on up the beach, and the emergency brake stuck on the Jeep, and it wouldn't pull. So Captain come back looking for me. He ran behind me, and we pushed that Jeep up and got burnt. I burnt the emergency brake out on it. When I got to the top of the beach, to about our outfit was about 2 miles inland, something like 2.5 miles inland that the fighting was, and we got there. So we put this man off at a aid station. They just cut his hair off, sewed it up, didn't give him anything, put him back on the Jeep, said he'll be all right. So away we went with him.
Oh, goodness.
When we got to where the unit was, they gave me a 16-inch screwdriver and a mine detector. Said, clear that field over there. We want to put some vehicles in. So I started clearing mines out of the field. That was the first job I got. So
how do you got a mine detector, which is a thing on the end of a stick?
I had taught mine detector classes in England. So it come my lot to clean the mines and clear the fields for the vehicle. So mm-hmm. We started from that. So we fought through the hedgerows in France, like all through that, and we actually, when we broke through there, after that, we went all the way across the Brest Peninsula, down through the Cherbourg Peninsula, halfway down and turn back. Then we went just to what towards Paris, France, and we were in Paris, France, 14 days waiting for the French 2nd Armored Division to go into town, because they wouldn't let the GIs go into Paris.
Mm-hmm.
We sat there for 14 days. I fought all the way across Germany and France and Austria, over into Austria. I have pictures here of the entrance of Salzburg, Austria. We were the first men in Salzburg, Austria. And I spent several months in Austria then before I came back overseas. But that's just a rough sketch of what mm-hmm. went on.
We like to hear all the stories and the details that you've got.
I couldn't think of all them stories. I have pictures here of everything. Here's a book of pictures. These things. All kind of pictures here now. These were actual pictures that was taken during mm-hmm. battle, see. Here's a picture. That's yours. Here's a paper thing at one of our reunions in Illinois.
Oh, okay.
That's a picture of the first tank into Salzburg, Austria.
Oh, goodness. This is interesting.
I've got a history book here that's got all these pictures in the history book.
Mm-hmm.
And I donated one of the history books to the Floyd County Library.
Uh-huh.
And,
Your nephew said that there was a, I think you were you in Belgium?
No, my brother-in-law was in Belgium. I was in Austria.
Okay. Well, there was something about you and capturing
there's things here. There's a whole history of what all went on during the sea. I didn't go into detail of all the mm-hmm. things that was done. Well, but we liberated King Leopold of Belgium during the war. Our unit did.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got pictures of him and his wife here. Him and his wife, it's that story right there I showed you. He was supposed to come with us. So, well, to start with, he came to New York. King Leopold was the king of Belgium, but he was in exile and he had a son. And the son, when we were honor guards for the king's palace there in Austria after when we liberated him from the Germans. And a little boy came out and played ball with us all the time. And so he said, if I ever come to America, I would look some of you boys up. So he came he was in Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, and come out in the paper said that the king and his wife spent more time with Cecil New of the 106th Cavalry that he used to play catch with during the war. Said he spent more time with him than he did with the governor. So the boy came back to our reunion and he was telling me, and had a picture of the king and all of them. He's sitting at the table talking to me and my wife, and I said, I asked him, you work for Cadillac, yeah? He said, well, I said, do you know Ed Stewart works for Cadillac, division head? Oh, yeah. I said, I had to go in to see him. That's my boss. I had to go see him before to get off from work to come down here.
Yeah.
I said, well, that's his sister you're sitting beside there.
Oh.
So, anyway, it's a big world.
It is.
But there's all kind of stories in this here, the things that we did and things I had to, I don't like to tell all these things, though they bring back some memories and so forth. But I'll show you some of these pictures that you get your own idea of them.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, right here is that's made you see better. There's little things in here from with that.
Where were these taken?
Well, they'd be better to show you in here. Right here. This is similar to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got the writing right there.
Okay. Cunningshofer. Okay. And snipers.
Now this.
I think I've been to that town.
Remember, so this page right here. I'll tell you something about it. This one is a different. This is a different one. This right here. This is a lieutenant land right there. I've got a big picture of it there someplace.
Yeah, right there.
I'll pick it up there. Now this next one.
Yeah, that's
right
there, dear.
Read what it says on the back of this one here, and then I'll see it. I'll read this one to you, and you can look at the picture there. It says 106th Cavalry group said cleaning out sniper from a Cunninghofer. That's the name of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Let Lieutenant Ben Hale is lying in the on the sidewalk, having been killed by a sniper a few hours earlier.
Oh goodness!
There so. Mm-hmm. See the man laying in the wall in
yeah,
the
sure
street.
Do. Yeah.
His mother came every year with our to our reunion. We have about 700 of them pictures we put on the wall. You know, she walk up and look at that picture. We got them great big ones like that. And she looked at that picture, but nobody never did tell her that was her son laying on.
Uh-huh. No, you wouldn't.
She only had the one.
She's had one son, but that was.
Yeah,
that but, was there, but there's a lot of interesting stories right here.
Oh, goodness.
Right here said a platoon of armored cars and half-tracks firing. There was actually firing in the...
Merlebach, France.
That was stationed. That's actual action pictures. The guns were firing when this picture was taken.
Mm-hmm.
These things, now you know what that is. That's an amphibious truck that they used during the invasion. That thing would come out to the ships. When we were sitting parked out there waiting for the tide to come in, these things would come out and unload guns and ammunition, men and everything, and they'd take off right back up to go inland, unload, and come back.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bivouac area there. Some
okay.
of the boys during the same there.
That's that same big picture.
That's, see what it says on the other side of that
it's
now.
This one.
All right.
Yeah.
Troops from 171st Squadron, the 106th Cavalry Group, attacking a town in tanks and armored cars. See, there, see, that was, they mm-hmm. were attacking a town. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a picture of that had the part of the king. So King Leopold was supposed to come to our reunion, and something was going on in his country, and he couldn't make it, so he sent his top attaché and to meet with us. She and I sit up at the head table since I'm their chaplain.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit and talk to this attaché all during the meeting. See, he's a top, in other words, your president would send lady, whatever her name is,
mm-hmm.
she's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to, the king couldn't make it, so he sent somebody else. But that's a half track making attacks there. That's a German tank turned upside down.
Mm-hmm. The Danube River.
That's right, they're crossing the Danube River, see, make a river we were tackling the river, making a hit, crossing just before we crossed it. Now here, show you how we got across.
Oh goodness! On the Rhine, north.
That's crossing the Rhine River. We pulled up beside the river. My outfit went and pulled up the river about 7 o'clock in the evening. They come around in front of us with dozer and run down over the bank and start unloading these barges. Before you come to a river crossing or something like that, they'd start bringing these things up high up. You could see a big, these barges coming up. You knew it was a river crossing mm-hmm. coming up. So they come in with dozers, went down over, built a road down over the hill, put them thing in and float them down and put them together. And at 6 o'clock the next morning, we crossed the river.
Uh-huh.
Pulled up the edge of the river at 7 o'clock in the evening. 6 o'clock next morning, we went across.
Oh, goodness.
There it is again. This bridge was blowed up here. That's a different one.
Uh-huh.
Different river, river crossing. But
so that's crossing the Rhine.
And this one up here is crossing the Rhine. This is, we crossed the Danube River too.
Uh-huh.
And this right here, I've got a picture, a 4x8. I've got, we're rebuilding a Jeep and got it done right here. Is where this is one that we rebuilt here.
Uh-huh.
That is built exactly like the one I had. It's got, right here it is, a better shot of it. They got my wife's name on the side of it, see there?
Oh.
And that's the way I had it. This is the exact replica of the one I drove up to Invasions.
Huh.
And got my wife's name on it, so they brought it. Got it rebuilt. It's in New York right now, and they take it to all of the parades and so forth. It's at a parade in New York right today. Had one last week, so forth. But they brought this Jeep here and had her picture beside of it. So the original Veda, that's her name on the side of it there.
And her name is?
Veda. That's her middle name.
Okay, her middle name is Veda. V-A-D-A?
Yeah, and then it's on that, and that's,
uh-huh,
it's showed on that vehicle there.
Yeah.
All the vehicles, the boys put some kind of a name on them. And
uh-huh.
One of the big deals in England was to watch all them Jeeps and vehicles go by and copy the names down and see who could get the most names off the American vehicle.
Well, can we take just one little break and ask you're his wife. What is your full name?
Helen Beda.
Okay.
My first name is Helen. Okay. G-L-E-N.
And what was your maiden name?
Stewart. S-T-E-W-A-R-T.
Okay. All righty.
My people worked in Cardiff County around Grayson in that area.
Uh-huh.
There's some new boys coming into the...
Well, you didn't tell her the day you were, your shipwrecked at sea, our daughter was born.
Oh, well, tell me about that. We got to hear that story.
Well, there was a lieutenant. Wayne Cowan was a troop. Well, he wasn't a troop commander. My troop commander was a captain, but he was a platoon leader. His wife was pregnant, and just before we started on the invasion, he centered all the mail going back and forth, and he knew that Helen was expecting a baby, and so his wife had our twins. Oh, he rode me high. Oh, I've already got mine. I've got twin boys. So when the ship was wrecked, I got back to England. I found out Helen had a little girl, see.
Discouraged.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you think a lot of her, even if she's
a girl. I'll have to. You mean the daughter?
Yes.
Well, she's works in Louisville now. She is a counselor for the state. And she has four offices, one in Louisville, one in LaGrange, one in
Central City.
One out to Fort Knox and another.
Now, what was that one? I see something written about it.
This is in November the 19th in 44, near Vancourt, Alsac, France.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that's some of the boys are coming in and some new men. Yeah, so I showed her that one. See, that's what the town looked like when we went through.
Yeah.
See the rubbish and everything.
Yeah.
And look at the people's faces here. You can see whether you see whether they were grinning or not. See, look at that.
No, they wasn't grinning.
And that's what the towns looked like as we went through. It's torn pieces, nothing but junk. And this is camouflage, showing how we camouflaged for the winter.
Uh-huh.
And that's actual pictures of the the vehicles that we
had. Who took these pictures?
Well, so, all of us.
Okay.
Different ones of us. This is the boy that they said the king spent more time with him than he did the governor.
Uh-huh.
That was taken over in Austria there.
Uh-huh.
New, it's showing that difference. That was our uniforms we had in the wintertime.
Uh-huh.
You take that coat off and turn it around, it was that color. Turn it the other way, it was white.
Oh, my goodness. Well, when I first saw the picture, I didn't even see the guy standing
camouflaged.
Because it was camouflaged, yeah.
There was a come of snow, and we whitewashed our tanks during the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And these, when you wear them, what time it's snowing, when it snows off, you turn it the other way.
Yeah.
Turn it upside down.
German snipers surrender near Coburg.
I'll show you one over here. Now, that's my Jeep. That's the way it looked there.
Uh-huh.
That right there was radio tubes and crystals and parts for the radios. I repaired.
Uh-huh.
That's where all my spare parts are here. Look at the machine gun right here on this side.
Yeah.
But there was a bomb here, there was shelling us.
Uh-huh.
And the shells was coming over here and going over. So the boys stopped out of the vehicles and getting in the ditches over here what time they were shelling.
Uh-huh.
And that wasn't funny.
No.
There's a German, American plane down, a P-47.
About the radios that you fixed on.
I'm sure that Victor. That's a German plane now. I was right here, the Foss Pocket, you hear them talking about that. The Americans killed about 150,000 Germans right through this valley here.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's horses around there and everything. They had horse grown cavalry ahead of us and everything, whatever they had. Everything they had wasn't mechanized, because you can see the two or three things you've seen horses there. And this is an actual picture I was taken as we went through there. And the American planes stopped this road up. It's like going across Abner Mountain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a two-lane road. And we run this German whole divisions back through there, the German, or their army, whatever it was they called it. And they blocked it off. And then they bombed them, shelled them, and everything. And we had to go through there, and we took a dozer and pushed his head off the road and went on to. You see a pile that's piled off there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something about this outfit here.
Okay.
Your Breidenbach,
mm-hmm.
Alsace, France. Cavalry, 3rd Infantry Division, taking German prisoners in the Maginot Line.
Yeah,
that was in the Maginot Line, but after we passed like over in Germany, there was a, well, I don't know how to tell it, anyhow, it's in my head the way it was, but right there's that first Jeep, their first tank going into Salzburg, Austria. You see the bridge, why we had to cross the river this way.
Uh-huh.
The bridge is all blowed. And there's a railroad train. That's not a picture of it.
Okay.
There was a train on the a railroad bridge had engines on there, and it took all the track up. And we was some places, Merlebach, or this is St. Gilgen, Austria. This is where I was. No, that's Merlebach. We was the Germans had helped this part. We had this part over here.
Uh huh.
He'll tell you on there.
Yeah.
The town. Let's see. This section of the town was helped by the 106th Cavalry Group. And the hillside, wooded land was helped by the Germans.
Huh. From the church overlooking the town.
Yeah. This over here. See, this big church over there. Must took a picture out through there.
Uh-huh. Now, you were talking about the tanks crossing the river into Salzburg.
That's the first vehicle in there. We went through, let's see, there's a story about it right here, but that's, mm-hmm. Here's the king and the queen and their colonel.
Mm-hmm.
That's King Leopold of Austria. Belgium.
Uh-huh. He had a very nice looking wife, didn't he?
She was 26 years old and he was 54.
Mm-hmm.
There was, after the war was over, this was in St. Gilgen, Austria, in a big lake there. That's where these people lived on one side of that lake, and we was right back out there. You can see some of the houses out through here that kind of along the side of the lake. And we had to clean up all of our vehicles. Took them out that lake and washed them.
So everybody got a bath, including the vehicles.
That's the end of the war.
Yeah. That's that.
Yeah.
Now, were you able to drive the tank across the whole way?
The tanks went across the river and back up on the other side. The bridge is all blowed, you see.
Uh-huh.
This was the first tank that got into Salzburg, Austria.
Mm-hmm.
We took off before the infantry. We were fighting with the infantry unit. We were a recon unit that went out ahead of all of the infantry or anything and hit them to see what was there, and the infantry followed us. So we got in Austria.
So is part of the Signal Corps, were you involved in the fighting or just involved in communication?
I was with a recon unit that done the fighting.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't no, everybody followed. Okay. Right here, read what's said right there.
Okay, just one second.
That's a picture out of the paper.
Uh-huh.
Read what's said.
Bluford Smith of High Hat and Rex Gearhart of Price attended the Golden Victory Anniversary of the 106th Cavalry Group in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, June 22nd and 25th. During the war, Smith served as a sergeant radio repairman for the unit. Gearhart was a tank gunner corporal. A number of local men served in the 106th Cavalry Group in Europe in 1944-45, including Paul R. Hale of West Prestonsburg, Ed Dahlhare of Wheelwright, and Roy V. Hannon of Erlanger. The 106th Cavalry Group participated in the Normandy campaign and the drive across France with Patton's Third Army. The unit served under the command of the 1st French Army in eastern France and with the U.S. 7th Army in the drive across Germany and into Austria. The 106th Cavalry liberated Salzburg on May the 4th, 1945, and freed King Leopold of Belgium and his family near the war's end. The group meets annually in Champagne. Smith has held the office of chaplain for a number of years.
Mm. Didn't I tell you the whole story? I've been trying for hours to tell
you. Yeah, I know, but I wanted to hear you. I wanted to hear your version of it.
Well, it'd take a long time to hear to my version of it.
Well, that's
It'll
okay. That's what I'm here for.
Bring back a lot of memories and all that. I don't need to think about it things until something happens or somebody that kind of resembles what went on, and then it runs through my mind again, and 30 minutes from that time, it's gone again, see.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the last 60 years, I have rehashed the whole trip in mm-hmm. little bitty digit at a time. And now we are building the second Jeep. We got this one's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And right here, I'll show you this. Here it is on display at West Point. See that?
Oh, yeah.
And I'll show you something else here. When I was, what one thing I got to, that's this. Here's
that's that bath picture.
Bath picture. And one of the things that I did do, I put all my men in the foxholes, my radio operators, and my officer got a pretty good write-up in the papers and so forth, but I did the work. I bet signal people ask for some, a piece of they had armored telephone cable that they put on the highway, drop on the highways. You can look at them if you want to. That they put in around the, on across the highway in a tank, and they run over it wouldn't hurt it.
Mm-hmm.
Armored cable.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked for a piece of that armored cable. I wanted to put my operators underground. Wouldn't give it to me, so I said, well, it's a good soldier, don't lose nothing. I just went by, got out of the Jeep, took my axe, and cut me a 150-foot piece of cable out of the ditch line. Where they had all of they had telephone lines in a week after you take up territory, the ditches would all be full of telephone lines, big rolls of it, because if a shell showed a hole in it or anything, they didn't try to repair it. They just run another cable and just keep filling the ditches full.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut out of 150 feet of cable, built a remote control to operate my radios from the foxhole, and put my men underground. Come mm-hmm. out with stars and the stripes that Captain So-and-so has his radio operators in the foxhole with the men. And, of course, I got a citation for it eventually. I got a citation from the Army. It said, due to Sergeant Smith's thorough knowledge of radio electronics, we were never out of communications for a period longer than 15 minutes throughout the whole campaign of Europe.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had that to put on my wall when I put in a radio shop later.
Mm-hmm.
And the house burned and burned it up, so I lost it.
But I've got a copy of it.
Yeah, you've got a copy of it.
Maybe. But I've got a picture here of that someplace. Let's see.
Mm.
There's a big picture of it. What you got in this? You're out of business right now.
Well, for the moment I am.
Well, could you?
We should have gotten a extension cord for you there. Those papers I had there was. Well,
it's a really pretty little wall thing, but it's my little.
It's in the way.
It's too fancy.
Extension cord, plug it in, get an extension cord, plug it into it. I had some pictures here.
Picture you want.
Oh,
she knows what picture you want.
There's a picture that I took over in France.
Uh-huh.
Where the war was over, and I had her then, look at that.
We all like it when we got hair, don't we?
Here, I'm trying to look for a bigger picture of this. That's on display that's the artifact that I give the boy in New York to ride on his, to keep that on his Jeep.
Uh-huh.
There's artifacts there that I gave him, every one of those things. And he's got a big, he has a big, here it is. You can see by the light. He displays that with that Jeep.
Hmm.
And that was in New York.
That's interesting.
Well, here's a, this is a, what's this? I guess, no idea. That's a bazooka shell that I fired out in Texas when I was in training. That's a training bazooka. This
wasn't a live round.
It wasn't a live round. There wasn't no powder in this end of it, see. So after it went through the target, I went out and picked it up and sent it home. Right here is a radio that was dropped to the French underground forces and before the invasion of France, that they would this was different frequencies at the different stations, you see. So each man in this unit, the French underground, that's the being that there was a American ensign, British captain, and a Canadian man that they dropped to organize the French underground forces. Before we went through, they blow bridges and all kinds of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So after we got through, we liberated them, we said, this boy came to our unit. They brought his crew with him. They had little vehicles, looked kind of like the Taliban riding a whole bunch of them in one vehicle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then they came to you out where we were bivouacking when we pulled in, you know, the town. And he wanted a carbine. He said, you're going home, you got one to take to his daddy. I said, now my job's over with. So I got him a carbine, give it to him. But
is a carbine a rifle?
Carbine, that's the guns that we use, you know.
Okay.
So he gave me this radio. That was one that they carried with them and everything, and I brought it home with me just to show. And I give it to this boy. He keeps it on that Jeep and shows it. He's got a big write-up about it. And there was a man come to him. He called me one day. He said, you know, there was a man come up and looked at that radio, and he told me exactly what it was. He said that he had worked with it here in the United States. See, when he built the radio. That's one from the manufacturer that built that radio and everything. They recognized it at one of these showings.
Huh.
But this was what we had our, this was where we cooked our dinner. Now, that little stove, this was a canteen cup we carried on the side.
Uh-huh.
I gave him that. Here's the unit, remote control that I built. That's one of them that I rebuilt when I come back. This piece come out of a tank. The tank commander of a tank would stand up on top of the tank and use a microphone and talk to one tank to another or whatever. And I figured if he could stand up there and talk to that, use that radio, I could use it out in the field. So I took one of these out of a tank. We was in the invasion of France. When the tank hit a mine, I crawled in. I took the radios out for get the spare parts.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we'd lose a vehicle like that, I'd take the radios, get them repaired. If I had to change the radio in a tank and it under fire, jerk it radio out and stick in another one.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to have something to put in there, see. In the meantime, when I took the radios out, I got me one of these boxes, two or three of them, that they'd have them all over. And I'd put the mic and stuff on that and put 150 feet of cable on the other end of it. And I got there and plug it in the radios, drag that cable out there, and my operator take a shell casing box or something, set it up there and put his... we didn't use speakers now because every time a big shell come in, it busted every speaker. Why?
Mm-hmm.
First shell went off, you lost every speaker you had.
Mm-hmm.
And we used his hand to do it that way. He sat there with a key. They had a key to operate. You plug a key into it, and the speaker, and a microphone, or you can put a key in a speaker and a key. I mean, a earphone and a key. So that's what we use out there. Mm-hmm. And that went. The news of that was on the Stars and Stripes.
Wow.
Here in war.
That's neat.
And I sent him this. I gave him this thing here, the radio, the cup, the canteen, and the stove. He got all kind of things that I gave him. I gave him a field telephone, one more field telephone. He got it. He someplace that we showed on the Jeep here. That's. See if it's on my place. Anyhow, he's got this and set up just like I had mine fixed. You see, right there. See that machine gun on the side of it?
Mm-hmm.
I met him after he got that thing fixed. Here's something else I gave him. This winch. Capstan winch on the front of a Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
You never did see one with a winch on it, but I had one of them in a barrel over here. I kept it for 40 years. And I had it in a barrel of oil, and I gave it to him. He sent me that picture after he got it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
After he got that on there, he said, "The picture. Here's a picture before. There's what it looked like before he put the winch on." See.
Uh huh. Well, now what was the purpose of the winch?
Well, pull you out of mud hole or anything.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, that winch, they call that a stump puller.
Uh-huh.
And that Jeep, amphibious. Vehicle I showed you a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they got. That's what they got on it when it gets up to the beach, across the river or something like that. They can't get out. They run up and tie a rope on a tree, put him on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's for.
Yeah.
See, you got a rope there goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture of my Jeep when I was over. I took that was taken of me over in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Salt Saint Gilbert in Austria. Well, that's just a few things to show you that I was there.
I knew you were. Well, now your nephew wanted me to ask about the time that you captured that whole division or platoon. I guess they're on the Maginot Line.
No, it wasn't Maginot.
No, that wasn't it.
That was after we went through. That was over in Germany.
Okay.
I had a. At Metz, France, we went around Metz. He was driving in the. It was driving the whole army driving the Germans out of Metz. And my outfit went around the side to keep them from coming out. And I was sent as a advance vehicle. They'd send somebody out. They wouldn't want the vehicle to sit on the highway. If you went out, if you're going to move a unit, moving up, somebody had to go out and head and where they were going to go and have everything set up, different places for them to pull off. You couldn't pull a 400 or 500 vehicle men off the road and let them sit there on the road till somebody comes off. If you did, they get strafed and so forth. So I was ahead advanced detail. I went into a salt factory. I ran in that salt factory, and the Germans was shelling with mortars, and they wasn't trying to hit me, but it was going on across in the fields, the other side of me. So when the unit come up, I reported it about it, you know, where they were coming from, the shells like that. But they never, when the unit moved in there, no more shells come in or anything. So one of the boys got hurt, and the medics was back a couple of miles back from us. And the wooded area had to go through to get back to the medics. And I took this boy back to the medics. And the captain was having a CP, a meeting, a command meeting. They all gather up at night to get orders and so forth for the next day or whatever. And he said, "Smitty, you're going back through that. It's getting dark late in the evening. You going back through that wooded area?" I said, "Well, hang around me, and I want to go through with you because it's dangerous to drive through there by yourself." Okay, so we started through. Got almost. There was a side road going off of it. I pulled up, and there was three officers, German officers, dressed in. Dress uniform. I mean, looked like they was just come out of a showroom or something.
Mm-hmm.
Had their weapons on their side and everything. They flagged me. I stopped. They wanted to surrender a battalion of men. So I got a battalion of men surrendered, 800 people. And Captain stopped way back from me. He said, "What do you know what I was doing?" I said, he said, "Why don't you disarm those people?" I said, "I don't want to disarm them." I said, "They want to surrender a battalion of men." "Well, tell them to come on out here." I said, "The captain said to bring them on out." He said, "See, I had a radio in my car, and he had one." And that person said, "We can't do that. It'll take an hour to get them all gathered up." I told him. He said, "Well, tell him that we'll wait right here for him." So in the meantime, he said, "I'll wait here." Said, "You run up there and get us an armored car or something, bring it down here." So I went and got an armored car. It was had a 37 millimeter cannon on it. It had six wheels. So I parked it here and turned the gun right down that road. And a few minutes, or not an hour, about an hour later, I sat there and waiting for them. They come marching out. And I told them where to go. And I marched them back down this about 3 miles to the headquarters. And they put ropes up and lined them all up on a mountain. Then go up and sit down. Next thing was to try to find something for me.
I wish I could find that one of the bomb stuff when they were presenting.
So the bronze star, you was trying to find him something to eat. Okay.
That's a picture of the Germans. Bragging about what Hitler promised them, and that's what they got. They killed, eating a horse that was killed.
Oh my goodness!
Butchering the horses.
Oh gracious! Well, I know where Frankenstein is. I've actually lived near there. But you were talking about that they had their 800 men, and you was trying to find them something to eat.
Yeah, well, the army is having to find something to feed them till they got rid of them, see? If they're late in the evening, how do you feed 800 men?
Extra 800 for dinner, right?
Yeah, so,
oh, goodness.
But I ran into all kinds of things like that. Right, here's a story.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some pictures that I took of the boys when we were leaving Austria. Now, I know every one of these boys here.
Uh-huh.
That's my buddies. We was fixing, the war was over and we was leaving Austria. Loading on the trucks to go.
Okay.
That's the ones, we had a point system. And whoever had the most points got to go home first, see.
Uh-huh.
And so this was the boys, that was the boys with the first points that are going out. I took their pictures. Of course, wasn't too happy to see them leave, but this is this boy in New York, he's from New York. We fought through his town and there in Germany, right late. There's a story in here about it. He tells all about what, about it, tells his story of it, see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's here someplace to see. Well, this year's when I met Patton in France. When we first went to France, you know, Patton was having problems in England with some people, and they wouldn't let him, didn't give him the 3rd Armored Division until way up, we had done, had fought through the Peroria Force and everything. But he was there, and they had a bogus army, called it the 18th Corps, when they come into France after the, Patton was supposed to come in there. The Germans afraid of Patton because he whipped the socks off of them in North Africa. And they tried to the news people was giving him a lot of problems, you know. Every time anything happened, well, they put up a lot of junk in the news. Patton had done so and so. He's supposed to cuss somebody out or kid or said something bad about the Germans or the French or something. And the news people picked up on that and gave him a hard time. And he, some kid that swore he had shell shock, you know, and he bawled him out good and called him a coward and so forth. The news people there, so they put that in the paper, a lot of junk, you know. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to get him fired, you know. And he come to France. He was just a skeleton headquarters. All he had was the headquarters. He didn't have an army or nothing. But I was I come through on one morning about 2 o'clock had a German prisoner on the front of my Jeep. We started me out with three Jeeps, and the town the Germans cut in had come in and took the town over, and the Frenchman run out the side and flagged me as I was going through. And he told me, you can't get on there. I said, the Germans just took that part of town. I said, you come this way. He showed me how to get out of town, go around it and get out. So these other two Jeeps I don't know where they did. I must have turned and went back or something, but I followed this boy's directions and got out of town. But I picked up a German prisoner in the meantime, had him on the front of the Jeep. Come out, then two motorcycles run out. One of them run across the road, and one was this way, and they flagged me. Had EMPs on. Well, I stopped, and he said, the general wants to speak to you. So I said, yes, sir. So they had an armored command car pulled up beside here. Then this command car pulled up. General Patton stood up in it. And, of course, I was in the Jeep. Now, this story says that I got out of the Jeep and run over to him. I didn't do that. I just saluted him. I stayed in the Jeep because I had a prisoner on the front of it. And he got it close enough to talk to me, see. And he said, where'd you get that damn hiney? He cussed every breath he spoke to you, he cussed. Where'd you get that damn hiney? That's what he called a German. I told him where I got him. And he said, well, where's your outfit? I said, were they on the move? I said, I told him where they were when I was dispatched to go in this town. I said, I couldn't get through town. The Germans took the town over. You can't go that way. Because the Germans flooded it. I'm the only one that got through. I said, two more Jeeps following me someplace, but I'm the only. I said, I don't know where they're at and where they got through or in. But I said, just don't go that direction because you get in trouble. And he said, well, carry on, soldier. You're doing a damn good job. And I pulled out, and I don't know where he went to that man. I met him right in the battlefield, right on the front line, nosing around by himself. Him had two motorcycle cars with him. Then, just a little while after that, they gave him the Third Army, and then we was attached to the Third Army.
That picture is down the restaurant. Remember, the brown styrofoam.
What's that?
That picture you're looking for when they presented.
Oh, that big. Oh, the picture of what now?
Of the Brown Star when they were presenting that to you.
No, I got one of them right here, a picture here.
Maybe. Come on, this is a big one down there. Would you like a Coke?
You're the one. She dried up.
Well, you're the one doing all the talking. You may be the one that needs the Coke.
Look, pictures here. This is copies of them. Some of the pictures I showed you. I got one there. I showed one there of Mia getting out of there.
So how long were you in Europe?
24 months in Europe. I get letters from these people every month or every month or two. And it said 286 days in constant battle throughout the heart of Europe. 106 cavalry, 286 days in constant battle throughout the heart of Europe. So I was in battle for 286 days.
So you found one of the Bronze Star thing?
That's that one there a while ago.
My pictures are...
Well, you were telling me on the phone about a fella that was, I guess he was from Germany or...
Yeah, that's this boy right here. I showed you his pictures on.
And something about he was wanting to find, he comes to your reunions looking for...
He comes to our reunion, said he was looking for the man that fired that 75 millimeter round through his grandmother's window. I show his picture.
Germans were there eating breakfast.
He's the one who built this Jeep. He's the one that's got. He was American. His father was American. There's a story out there about it if you wanted to read it.
Well, he was born.
He was born in Germany himself, yeah.
And his daddy was.
His grandfather owned a big grist mill and a sawmill. There's a water mill beside it, and the boys fired
the Germans ran, didn't they? They were eating, made them.
Well, he comes sit down beside my wife and me, my wife. I said, you still looking for the gentleman that fired that round for you, man? Yeah, I said, well, we had 18 tanks there that day. And Rex Gayhart, my neighbor here, he was a gunner on one of the tanks. Now, you got about as close as you ever get. I said, you got it down to number 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, told us a story right here. You can read the story. I got a copy of this, of what he told us, someplace right here. I looked at it there just a half a minute ago.
My pictures are on.
It's probably in that group of stories that you were showing me.
Well, that's true. I had a picture of it. I give you one there a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was a.
What were you looking for?
I'm looking for a typewritten pages or two pages.
There's typewritten pages on the back of that pile of papers right there at your elbow. They're at the bottom of the pile. Here. No, there you go. The ones with the paper clip. Right there.
Oh, yeah, there's another thing I was looking for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I always remember them like that, won't we?
So, were you ever wounded?
Well, when the ship wrecked up, I was blowed up against the ceiling, and everybody was knocked out better than Michael. I thought I come to before a lot of them did, and I thought everybody was dead. Concussion will kill you; he knocked you out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I wouldn't accept a Purple Heart for it, but
I could a lot never of boys understand did. Why. That's just the way he is.
And I know later I could have got actually 5 points for it. I took it. Give me a pencil here, man. I'll read something.
Oh, here's a pencil.
Okay.
Have you got any more copies of those stories?
No. This gentleman wrote these stories himself. The one I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one in here that tells his story. This says it's told by Rupert Smith. That's the story. He asked you questions and he wrote these things up himself.
Mm-hmm.
Tales of the 106th Cavalry Group compiled by Norm Durrell. It's compiled by somebody else, you see. Mm-hmm. He's a real good hand to write these things, though.
Yeah, he's done a great job. I'd love to have about a week to work on this.
If you could, I'd tell you what you could do. You could take these and then send them back to me.
Well, I was wondering, I wondered if you'd be willing to let us do that.
Of course. Well, this is, you won't have time to read them right now. See?
No.
Hard of communications mm-hmm. here. This is.
So.
This gives you a story of what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right here said, Buddy and another trooper were set up for a bivouac area. They proceeded through his town and to the outskirts of the on the other side, adjacent to some woods. The other trooper got hurt. Buddy brought him back to the medics. After dropping him off, the major told Buddy to return to the potential bivouac area, set up and complete your mission. Upon his return, three officers in full dress uniform were standing in the road and flagged Buddy down. They were officers of the from elements of the Hungarian division, and they told Buddy they wanted to surrender. From a jeep several hundred yards to the rear, an officer inquired of Buddy what these fellows wanted. Buddy told him that they wanted to surrender. The officer said to bring them down, which Buddy relayed to the Hungarians. They said that was not possible since it would take them several hours to get all of the troops together to effect a surrender. Relaying the message, the officer told Buddy to stay there and wait for them. After waiting an hour and a half, a column of over 800 troops came and surrendered to Tech Sergeant Blueford Buddy Smith at Highhead, Kentucky. There's several stories in there that
mm-hmm.
he wrote. You can get some ideas of
the Bronze Star thing?
Yeah, he's pinned in the Bronze Star on me.
Mm-hmm. And that you got the Bronze Star for putting the
all the things I did, you know.
Yeah.
Takes a whole 2 years of fighting, you know. I got a Bronze Star, but my mm-hmm. Started to tell you, I was sent down to Louisiana to install the radios in the tank. They didn't have anybody. In fact, they were just getting the radios. They let me stay at home. They'd have me back there in 2 weeks. But they was until they got the radios shipped down to Louisiana, they didn't need me.
Mm-hmm.
So they let me stay at home almost 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
But when they needed me, they come back and they sent me down there from. I sent me to through to Cincinnati, Camp Atterbury. It's out of Cincinnati, and I was there 2 days, and then right on down to Louisiana.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they didn't send me orders because the orders had to go through. The chambers, but I was there. I just went in and I didn't tell them why I was there or nothing. See. But I did wound up. I was working on the radios. I hadn't told them what I was doing, but I was in taking my basic training, and then of the evening before the sergeant found out that I knew what the radios were, you know. They got these radios and started putting them in the tanks and they couldn't get them to work. It's a long story. But
it's okay.
I was taking my basic training and we were confined to area. Everybody was confined to the area, but from the basic training. So I went to day room, just loafing around, and sergeant was in charge of the day room that evening. He was sitting listening to the radio. And I said, what's your after him? He said, well, they're out there, 10 miles out there. I said, you can't, these radios won't talk that far. I said, that radio will talk that far. And he had this one out of a Jeep and he's setting it up on the table. And I said, let me look at that radio for you in just a minute. No, he said, you messed that up and I'd have to pay for it. I said, I know that radio. I said, do you have an ECO kit that goes with it? Well, I don't know what that is. I said, well, it's a kit that comes with these radios. Let's see if you can find one. Now, he got it out. I got some oscillator, some tubes out of it, and opened it up and jerked it out. And I retuned it. Radio, because I knew what I was doing. I retuned it on the station he was on, put it back in. I said, I'll try it. Hey, well, Sarge, what you? I didn't know you was out there tonight. Well, I found myself something. So that evening, or next evening, when I got off from duty, he was standing there. Come on, Nicky Foy, you skull. So I had to go work on the radios, and I tuned them all up for the unit. My troop had perfect communication, nobody else getting anything. So they started loaning me out to the others. One evening, the two MPs come pick me up, took me down to command headquarters. Went in the colonel. I said, I didn't know what they wanted. They went on each side of me. You know. Are you an FBI agent or undercover agent or something? I said, no. Well, why are you getting mail from Washington, D.C., Army headquarters in Washington? I said, I don't get any. I said, I know you don't. I've got it stacked up over here. Had all my orders and everything. So I got along pretty good after that. Of course, I give up my officer status in order to get to go home. Spend 2 weeks with that.
Uh-huh.
Cost me my Army officer status.
Well,
I had to go back in as a PFC and go back up through the ranks.
Uh-huh. What rank did you
I was
leave
a technician, sergeant technician. A technician was in charge of equipment.
Wasn't that a T4?
I
always like this picture here of him.
Three-stripe sergeant, but mm-hmm. I was a technical with a technical.
I guess because he had hair then.
That hair's important, isn't it?
Over in France, there was a barber, a woman barber.
Oh, excuse me.
We'd go in and get your hair cut, and she'd take your picture.
Now
they plaster your hair down with some kind of heavy axle grease or something.
Now you did look through this, didn't you? All this.
No, that's the one that Chevy sent me. What's this up here? This is coal mining thing. That's a motor in the mines, and that's my wife sitting. That little girl sitting on there. Her daddy and her grandfather. Her daddy and her uncle.
Uh huh. Who's all those other kids?
My cousins and some of my sisters.
That's two men and their kids.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what they done? My uncle had a little bit of pull at the mines. He let us go in the mines.
He was superintendent of the mines.
Yeah. But he let us lay down in a car.
He was the mine foreman. That was her uncle. Her daddy there, the mine foreman. This was where we lived up at Ligon, that's a mine there. There's a shop building, and this is the locomotive. That's why I was telling you about running one of these when I was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
In the same mines up there.
But now they would never have permitted that. We laid down, there was about...
That could be the same motor I run.
Hmm.
Laid down in the car. Mm-hmm. And they said, now don't
raise your head up.
Don't raise your head up, whatever you do, and don't look up to shut your eyes. I did.
But
it felt like that top was coming in on us.
There was another one of them stories there now, a written story that you should have. But the boy that tells the story when we fought through his town in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
We fought through his town in Germany. And he the Jeeps come in, three Jeeps come in the yard after the fighting was over. He said, Mama had to take all the kids and hide out. And after the fighting was over.
They went to the woods, didn't they?
That's the first truck mines ever made in West Virginia before we moved over here, about 1908.
Yeah. Well, you were saying the Germans were coming through and
The Americans rather come through and the Germans, he lived in Germany, her and his mother and dad and all of them were Germans. He was, I believe he said 6.5 years old.
Good.
And we was fighting up here on this, through back to the mountain, back through there, and the boys, this down here next to the river was this grist mill and this farm, you know. And they just turned the tank around there and fired three rounds through to shake everybody up, you know. Mm-hmm. And didn't know that there was a German officer and nine soldiers in back of the building. And he said this German officer they'd all come in there the night before. We was pushing them, you see. And they come in there the night before, took up, and the German officer was sitting at the table. He'd made his mother fix his breakfast. And Anna Wendell said she'd just put something on the table and walk back to the other end of the kitchen. She'll come out through the window right in front of this officer. Said, needless to say, he got up and left. He went through the window, through a wall over here, through a water tank, and out another window, and hit a whale box and exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And said, Mama got the kids and took off with them and said, they had some French soldiers, prisoners that took care of everything at the farm. And said one of them had one of these fellows up dressing him with them shells, shrapnel, just tore them all pieces. You know. After the battle was over, said he, and you see it in one of them stories are, after the battle was over, said he, that everything slowed down, so everybody started coming back home. And they started coming back home. So said three Jeeps come in the yard. And he remembered the kind of numbers he had on and everything. And then after he come back, he was raised here in the United States. His daddy was American.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked up one of these Jeeps and had rebuilt it just exactly the way that the one they looked like there. So he got the pictures of mine and to copy his from me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that's on display, and you see that picture of it here.
Yeah.
That's these pictures there, that's one of it. That's when he brought it to church to get Veda to stand up beside of it.
Mm-hmm. Now you're.
And this is in the boy. Now he's got. There's a story about that in this.
I'm sure it's right here in this pile.
Well,
it
could be.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking for it here for you.
Your nephew also said there was something about somebody getting a first Jeep ride in your Jeep. Who got their first Jeep ride? Was that King Leopold's son?
Oh, no. No, I don't remember that deal.
Okay. All righty. Okay.
But we... In other words, we were guards for the palace there for King. His boy would come out. He called it playing catch with us, play ball with us. You know, we'd play ball with him, you know, and everything like that. And our general, what's his name, Halsop? Anyway, we captured him. Herman Gorn's vehicle and drove it, just took along with us the boys to ride the thing. When we had got into Austria, we still had that boys playing with, you know. It's a big old, it's a staff car. It had two wheels and four wheels in the back and the front and the chauffeur set out front, you know. Herman Gorn's car. We captured that thing, so Colonel got it. and give it to the queen.
And give it to the queen.
Yeah. We didn't need it. It was her Gordon's old car. And we drove that thing around, so he come up there. He got in with the king and the queen there. Come in one night. She was driving that thing, had his helmet on. He was drunk, laying over the side.
Part of it.
He went down to Italy and got an Italian speedboat, brought it up there, one of them torpedo boats, and put it on that lake. And when they opened that thing up, everybody else had to get out of the way. It just about threw all the water out of the lake. The lake was 400 or 500 feet wide, you know. It's a nice lake, St. Gilgan Lake. Mm-hmm. You can tell when he is around, he can't ride that boat up and down that lake.
Who was that?
That general code. And he's the one that signed my citation that I got.
Now, was this still during the war, or was this after?
The war was over. Okay. When the war was after the war, we ended up in Austria at this big lake over St. Gilgan. And it's a great big long lake. The Germans had a training place, or a naval training base on that lake where they trained these boys and everything. So we took them all as prisoners.
I just now thought about where a lot of your pictures are. Deanna took them in a big thing like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of these things are the reunion dinner speaker, Lieutenant. Mm-hmm. That's just one of our. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you came back after the war, then did you go back into mining or?
I come back. I got in on Friday evening. By the way, my wife's wedding anniversary is on Halloween night. That's October the 31st. When I come back from Army Signal Corps, when I was in the Signal Corps, I got home on Halloween night, and I stayed home till January. When I got out of the Army, I got home on Halloween night.
Hmm. Wow, that's Friday, a good anniversary.
Friday night. Friday night. I tell you, Halloween night was our wedding anniversary, and I think all that time I only missed one Halloween when I was overseas. I couldn't get home, but I was over 24 months. But the way I left and got back, I'd only missed one Halloween out of that whole deal. I got home on Halloween night and Friday night, and I went back to work on Monday at the coal mine.
Mm-hmm. My job was waiting for me. And then tell her the rest of the story, which you eventually went into, along with your mining.
That was on Friday, Monday, I went to work, and the next Saturday, I drove down to Huntington, West Virginia, to try to buy equipment to put a radio shop in. Well, they sold me what they had there, but you couldn't get anything. Everything was rationed. Parts was rationed and everything else. They took my name and everything. Said they'd sold a boy some meter, a vacuum tube bolt meter, something I needed, you know, bad. And they sold one to a man in Prestonburg. Said the only one we had, we got in, they took my name down though and everything, and didn't know me from nobody. So I come back to Prestonburg and stopped this man's house and bought everything he had, his whole shop and everything, and loaded it up and brought it on hi-hat, put me in a radio shop. Well, Wednesday of the next week, that company down there sent me another outfit just like it. And I had to send it back because I had bought what. So I went in the radio business. That was in 45. I worked in the mines, run repaired radios. So in 1949, they started putting a TV station in Huntington, West Virginia. So I'd work to get off of mines at 2:30 in the evening, drive to Huntington, West Virginia, and take television classes under the RCA sent their engineer to Huntington, set up a class in the hotel. I forget the name of the hotel. I was the only one they had there at that time. We We put antenna on top of the roof, and was picking up Cincinnati stations. Hmm. And the first television to come in Huntington, West Virginia, was shipped, and we got it and put it had to put it together. Come in two boxes. They'd send you the chassis in one box, the picture tube in another. You had to put that all together. Had to build it yourself after you got it. Mm-hmm. There was a monitor. The station, Huntington WSCC station, had a monitor. But that they didn't have a television set. They had a monitor in the station. But we had a television set. We put it together there and studied it. And so we had to line it all up and everything. And I would drive there. I'd leave down there. Class was over at 11 o'clock. Drive back home. It's 120 miles. Drive home, work the next day, go back the next night.
Tell us that you had in the first TV.
Well, that's going.
System in the
so when that was, when they put the station in then, you could get, nobody could get television except around town, you know, they could set up an antenna and pick up there. Mm-hmm. And I bought a television set. First around that come around, and the carriage at the top of that hill up there. Run a line off to my house. I lived out there in the bottom. And I put a cable off the hill. And I watched Joe Lewis get whipped at my house when he got his last fight. You know.
Oh, goodness.
And I had a cable run off the hill. You know. People
and
come
you
from
know
every
how
place,
he,
let me, come every place to look at the television.
Let me explain to her how. He would go up on the hill to check the signal. Are you? You're not recording that, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
that's it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we put the line in. We don't know such a thing as a field strength meter or anything like that. So we carried the television back top that hill.
Oh, my goodness.
And run the line back there. Sent the television up, cut us, made us a box, 2 minutes, carried it back up there. And oriented the antenna and everything. Then bring the television back home. And so it went from that. I got the start sending me equipment to, from through the Huntington station, Huntington electronic supply in Huntington, and two or three places I'd get equipment from. They'd give me the equipment, I'd test it and send it back, make reports on it. For cable, that's where the cable systems all got started. Not just but me, but everybody else was doing the same thing. You see, mm-hmm. trying to get the picture when they put the station in, everybody in the mountains couldn't get a picture.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to develop something else. So we went
we
to
the
top
the
of the mountain, started
picture
running, go back where the picture was on top of the mountain, and run it off to the valley.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a television cable in here, and then I hooked my neighbor on, and then the next neighbor, and the next neighbor. So. I went in, bought equipment, put in a tire back on the mountain, and I put in, it cost $400 for the equipment to put the antenna and the cable off the hill. Of course, it costs you more than that now, but
mm-hmm.
it cost me $400. And I hooked 10 customers on it and got my $400 back, charging
mm-hmm.
$40 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I started charging $4 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So I got $40, and then I had my $400 back, and $40 a month, $4 a month out of each cable, see.
Mm-hmm.
10 of them.
That's just $40.
Then I hooked up 10 more. I spent my $400, hooked up 10 more. 10 more, 10 more.
Hmm.
Kept it 40 years, raised two kids, through college, sold it and got... went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
$2.5 million.
Well, I don't tell her that.
Well, she's not.
Well, you got more than $400 back at it.
I got my $400. I had, at the end of the time, I still had $400, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I got it back several times. But
yeah. Did you tell me how you checked the signal?
Yeah,
I built it. I built me up.
I had to shoot the gun when it came through.
Start off with that, when I thing hooking these antennas up. She had a picture at home, you know, and I go up there to adjust the antenna. when I get a good picture on it, she shoot the pistol, see? Like
That's good. So you just had to keep going around and around and around until she, but you couldn't go very fast, could you? Because I remember those days of TV antennas, a little bit more.
Yeah. So I bought, they come out with a field stress meter, but you'd had to plug it in the wall, you know, had to have power for it. Well, mm-hmm. You didn't have no power on top of a mountain, that sort of thing. So I went to mines, I went to work in the mines. We had battery lights, you know.
Yeah.
Well, when I was overseas, I had an incident to happen, but so I had. We needed the boys, the army. But every time we'd go into town, they'd take over the radio station. They'd call it Armed Service Station. They'd play music on it. So, mm-hmm. So I went in, got a radio, and wired the power supply out of a Jeep, got 110, wired it up so I could get 110 volts out of it, plugged the radio in it, and put filters in it to get the noise out and all that stuff. I knew what to do, so I had the radio in my Jeep. Well, the lieutenant come along and caught me at it, and now he they take that and give it to the captain. I said, Captain can't use that. Well, take it in or give it to any house. Well, I had to use my Jeep. I had my Jeep wired so I could plug it into the radio and get 110 volts out. And so Captain used it while when I had to give me orders to do something, the radio broke out or something, I had to go, whatever the problem was. I took my Jeep and I took his radio. So after that, I decided I wouldn't be done that way anymore, so I went in the German house and I had a big radio. I took all the guts out of it, took the big power transformer out and threw it away, and got a 12-volt battery that we had vehicles, you know, and hooked my 12-volt batteries up line to it to light the tubes up, and then I went at these. We had battery power pack in a Jeep at 150 volts of dry cell batteries, so I had access to supplies, so I took 150 volt batteries and wired that battery to work the plates of the tubes. Mm-hmm. You got a radio tube has a you got 2 volts, you got a high voltage there, and you got 12 volts or 6 volts to run the batteries. Mm-hmm. So I wired that up, then take the big speakers, I'd hang it out on the side of a German truck. I've got a picture of it here someplace. And I captured a German truck and made a radio shop in it. And assigned a driver to drive that truck, and I repaired the radios. I had a shop, but it went right along with us. Mm-hmm. And then something happened to the radios. I'd bring them in, repair them, and I kept an extra going. Someplace here is a picture of the truck that I had. It's in Salzburg, Austria. We parked in Salzburg, Austria. He'd be here someplace. I've got to show you that. But I knew how to redo the things like this. So I built me a battery power supply with this. By doing the same thing, I went to the mines and cut mining batteries and cut them apart and rebuilt the field stress meter so I could carry it to the top of the mountain and built my own. This is just a second or two to find this thing. I hope you get that turned off for a while.
So while you were running your TV or your cable company, did you also work in the mines?
Worked in the mines all the time.
Okay, and what did you do in the mines?
I started off as a water boy and In 1936, I started off as the water boy. In 1963, I was the superintendent, and I shut the mines down and worked it out.
Mm-hmm.
I went from the water boy to the superintendent.
Would it be in that little thing right there? I mean, that manila envelope.
Yeah, I'll look at this right quick.
Okay.
There's a picture of baby.
Yeah.
Now, here's the gentleman. We're building one now.
Uh-huh.
This is what we got built. It's like this, exactly like that right there. I'm going to drive it in the parade next week after next.
Oh, okay.
A Jenny Wiley parade coming up.
Uh-huh.
We've got it ready. We've got four new tires laying down there to put on it.
Uh-huh. So is your Jeep here now? Or?
Yeah, I've got one down here. We got rebuilt. I kept my garage 37 years, and I decided to rebuild it. Right here is something.
What's that?
This is the accomplishment of it. That's from our colonel after the war is over. He wrote us a letter.
Mm-hmm.
You might get to read that. Here's something that goes with it. This tells the number of boys that was killed and their names, address.
Mm-hmm.
Ones that we lost. Here's the story that you wanted to see.
Uh-huh.
That's what you wanted to see there.
Uh-huh.
This is part of it, too.
Okay.
All of that.
So you worked as a mine.
I started when I was, like I said, years ago, when I come back from the Army and went right back to work in the mines. And I worked as long as there was any mines. In other words, when the seam of coal worked out, we shut
the mines in.
Yeah. Shut the mines down, and I was the first one of the first. I was first man on the job, and I was the last man on the job.
Hmm.
We moved down here, but later we started this new mines out here. I come with my dad down here, and we started the mines. January 1936. Well, I worked here off and on until I went to the Army. When I come back, went back to work, and I worked then. We shut it down in 1963.
Did you tell about your son taking over and helping you when you got out of college?
So how many children do you all have?
Two.
My son.
That was his son.
He took over the cable system actually when he got out of college and stayed right with it. Still crying because he sold it.
He'll never let his daddy forget that. He loved that work.
Yeah.
Well,
it major.
Everybody that. Makes mistakes. I don't care. Some good and some bad.
Major in electronics.
Some good and some bad. Some worse.
He loved it.
Uh-huh. So how did you all meet, or when did you all get married?
We grow that. We come this world together. Move here from. You don't hear that now. That's the part that would have been in the movies.
That's the part that's going to be in the movies?
It would have been in the movies.
Oh, okay.
I hope I didn't take part of your stuff.
She lived at Legan, come here in 1922. That's the years that she was born, where I was born.
Uh-huh.
1922. And I come over here, I was 9 years old when I come here in 1932. And she was selling the grit paper.
She was selling the grit paper.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And her sister sold the grit paper. So when the train runs.
He let me deliver him. I had to help him.
when the train would run every Friday, the grit paper come in on Friday, and then just after the train. See, there's only one way in this. You either go up the creek or you go down, see? Mm-hmm. Train come up first stop, then you come back out. Mm-hmm. The train sits there a while, and you pull back out. There's a trestle up here, went across from one mine to another. When I started to tell you, when I was working, I was 12 years old, I'd come out of that mine with a motor and go in the other mines and work on all the pumps and come back and go back to the other one by myself. Mm-hmm. But I go by that trestle and I look down the road and sit there and watch down the road, and these two little girls come up the road peddling papers. I'd run off that bridge. It was about 9, 10 years old, you know. Run off that bridge, run back of the house. These mining companies, they didn't have bathrooms in. Everybody had it. Stand out in the back of the house in the wash bowl and a towel. I went up there and I'd rub my hand on my face, grab that, wash it up like all that dirt on that towel, you see. I'd leave a big black place on the towel and I'd have a ring this way. I'd run out the front door to meet the grit paper girl.
Uh-huh.
See, she still haven't got away from me.
She's still hanging on.
So how long have you all been married?
Come Halloween night?
Mm-hmm.
What is it, Granny? 65 years.
Mm-hmm. 65 years. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the secret to a long marriage?
Get you one you're afraid of.
Oh, that's cute.
I always said, you get one, go get one of them little hillbilly girls, and you've had it. There's no way to get rid of it. Got me a job in the mine, you know. Started to work that next morning. Went in on a man trip, and the motorman stopped the motor. Now, Smitty, I want to tell you something. This is the gang work where everybody worked hard, you know. This is a job that you work at. You got a nice looking little woman down there. If you ever starve one to death, you can't never get another one. You're going to have to work to keep her up. You can beat one to death, you can run her off, you can do whatever you want to do, but if you ever starve one to death, you can't never get another
one. He's ornery.
Oh, goodness. So when you... Well, so. Lord, now what do I ask? When you started working in the mines, were they doing hand loading? And
hand loading, yeah. I loaded coal for one of the gang work. I done all kind of work in the mines. I done company work. I laid track. I went with the engineers. Drug the chain for engineers. I done everything. But the gang work, they would get 10 men, give them a motor, machine, and 10 bank cars, and a section of mines. And everybody worked, see. We had 6 loaders. Machine crew was a man, 2 men cut the coal, 2 of them hauled the coal. That's a motorman, brakeman, and a machine man, his helper. 6 loaders. I was one of the 6 loaders. And our quota was 180 tons a day. Them 6 men loaded 180 tons a day. That's 30, you load 30 tons a man. When you get your 30 tons of coal, you could come outside. So we always got off early every day.
Hmm.
Loaded with a shovel.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you all have, like,
rail mines, had rail mines, and big drop bottom cars that hold 5 tons a car.
Mm-hmm.
And you load 12 of them cars, you get your 60 tons. You see, 2 men load together.
Mm-hmm.
That
and
got
two more men load another place and two in another place. We mm-hmm. cleaned that up and go to the next. And we had to lay all the track from they had company men. They would lay the big long rails, 30-foot rails. At the end of that 30-foot, we'd have to mine another 30 feet. We'd load it small jumpers to keep our cars up. We set all the safety timbers, and then and this was bad top. They had to set 8x8 timbers, and they floored it with timber. Mm-hmm. And the company men would set the big 8x8s, and we set all the safety timbers. That's mm-hmm. what we call that dead work. You've done all that kind of work besides loading 30 tons of coal a day.
Mm-hmm. Now, you all used machines like to get the coal out, and you didn't do any pony mines or anything like that?
We had all ponies. That. We had all kinds. We had pony mines and everything, but this particular mine right here, we had steel rails in it. But Ligon, now we had ponies. That was my first job. I had the mines. Like I said, when I went in, when I was 12 years old, my company job was to take care of the pony. I was a stable man. I'd go to school, mm-hmm. get off from school the day, I'd fix the ponies didn't come out of the mine until 6 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. They went in at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they worked 12 hours. I would feed them ponies and everything in the morning, have their food in there. They'd leave. When they come back, be even, all their food be in the boxes and water and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. My dad never gave me a dime to go to school. I worked my own way.
Mm-hmm.
I had a year and a half of college when the war broke out.
Mm-hmm. What were you majoring in?
Whatever.
Okay, you're just doing your general ed stuff.
I went into electronics. I went to the World Fair in 1939 and watched television up there. The first television was ever made. And they had an antenna on top of the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a television set at the World Fair.
Mm-hmm.
1939 World Fair, I got the chance to go. And they had a TV station, the only station in the world now, was in New York. And the Empire State Building was a site of the antenna on top of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And they could reach out 24 miles, as Forrest had been able to pick up a picture.
Hmm.
And so then when I'll tell you something else. One of my instructors was an engineer in a radio station in Cincinnati, WLW. When we were back here, we could pick up Nashville, Tennessee, three or four stations, all you get off the radio. You had to put an antenna from one side of the mountain to the other and take a pop bottle between the insulators and drop the wire straight down to your house before you get anything. And Cincinnati come on the air with an experimental station that had a 750,000 watt station in Cincinnati. Wasn't allowed to turn it on until after 6 o'clock in the evening, and it could run until 6 o'clock next morning. But when they turned it on, that was the only thing you could get, and it just drowned everything else out.
Mm-hmm.
And the instructors sitting back in the station, they had oscilloscope there, and you could see the pictures, the signals. They had streetcars in Cincinnati, and it's something you don't see no more. Huntington had streetcars in Cincinnati, and Louisville, and so forth. But every time a streetcar turned a curve around town, the signals would reflect from that streetcar back to the radio station. And they got to studying it, and they tell you that the British had radar first. Radar come from Cincinnati High.
How was
radar was discovered in Cincinnati High because that experimental radio station would put out so much signal that it would reflect from the streetcars when they'd turn the curve, and they could tell which one it was, tell how long the streetcar was, and how fast is it going when it come around the curve.
Huh. Wow.
And so that's the first place they ever had radar.
And how did you find that out?
Huh? My instructor was one of the people that had done it.
Okay, and that was in when? What year?
That was in 34 and 35 and 36.
Okay.
And then when they said that the British is the first one that discovered radar, well, they watched the television. They used to pick up streetcars with it instead of airplanes, you know.
First used with streetcars. Huh. Now, did your mines ever use goats, or did they just use ponies?
Oh, back up, we had ponies up here, and then I run truck mines up here in the holler. I had ponies in my mines, and a pony is the smartest thing in the world. We had ponies in another mines up here, and I had a mines up here. I had a little mule that I run a mule in one mines. It's just mall mules at the circus had brought some little small mules through here, and we bought two or three of them, put them working the mines. And something else I started to tell you about.
Okay.
Well, it slipped my mind now, see. We talked about the radar and the first television. Yeah. But Atwater Kent, that engineer was working for Atwater Kent. And when they went over to England, this, I told you, 1939, we had television in New York. Well, in 1944, this engineer from Atwater Kent went over to England and put a transmitter in a B-25 bomber, and he flew over the coast of Normandy during the invasion, and Eisenhower and the officers in charge of the war sat there and watched the invasion on television from there wasn't no television out on for public then. Public television didn't come out to 46. And I put a television line off that hill in 1949. 3 years later.
Goodness.
4 years later, I had a cable system for. I had cable television in 1950.
I believe we have about 2,000, well, over 2,000.
I started off with me and my neighbors here up this line here, and then their neighbors down across the hill over there, and we just kept running it. And finally, when I ended up, I had 64 miles of cable in, and had over 2,000 customers on.
And have you always lived right here?
Well, we lived down here. We got married, and when I come back from the Army, we never lived together until after I come back from the Army.
Not very long.
My dad,
Killeen, Texas.
My dad built her a company. When I went to the Army, the company I worked for built her a house when she come home from. Back from Texas, she was with me out in Texas, and I went overseas, and they built her a little two-room house down here, and she lived in that when I come back in the Army. Then I moved from there up here. In this same bottom, I moved right over there. That house burned down. My dad ended this when my mother lived here. She passed away. My dad had a farm over in Ohio, so he went back over there, and I bought this house after my house burned down. So I just live just right here at High Head all my life, ever since. All our married life has been at High Head. We lived 4 miles up the creek before that. was a mining camp up there then. Mm-hmm. It's out and gone now.
What's the name? What was the name of that mining camp?
It was a
Blue Beaver.
Well, that was the
company.
High Head Elkhorn Coal Company. It was that same company that we come from West Virginia over here in 31, you see. My dad come 31. We bought a family from over in January 32. Uh-huh. Oh, you can get a story all out of that crap or not.
Why did they call that Blue Beaver?
Well, that's... Blue Beaver was a little camp. There's two parts of the camp. There's two mining companies up there originally. Yeah. And my dad, during the Depression, bought both of them mines. See, mm-hmm. Him and Baber did. Bought the one at Garrett and these two up here and started them back up. Well, they come over here and started the company, shut down in West Virginia, and they come over here and bought these two. And then they called him, and he come on over. He was the man that done the mining. Was this the company all someplace else, you know. And he was the company representative that moved this year and run the mines.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He worked for him over in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever have any problems with any union disputes or anything in your mines?
No. I belonged to a union for years here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was a union man. My dad was a foreman. So
mm-hmm.
No problem there.
Okay. You know, in Harlan County, a lot of times you'll get...
They did. They had that problem in Harlan County, but we didn't have it. And proper, so right in here.
Mm-hmm.
People was meaner in this part of the country than they were over. What happened? The local people resented the people that come in to work. Friction, all like that, and mm-hmm. There was these mining camps was bad anyway. They put up the company owned owned the store. They owned all the houses. They rented the houses. Of course, my dad was the general foreman. He rented all the houses, and he was in charge of the stores and the doctor offices and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. But the company had their own money. They called it scrip, and when we was in West Virginia. Logan County. We live in Logan County. Well, that scrip had an L in it. When they moved to Ligon, they brought the same scrip with them. It had an L in it, see? Ligon Mining Company, Logan Mining Company. But the company was Elkhorn Mining Company, and at Elkhorn Mining Company at Ligon, and then we moved down here. It was a Hi-Hat, see?
Mm-hmm.
Because Elkhorn owned the coal that they had leased from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you were telling me way back that you were the oldest of 17 children?
No, I'm the oldest boy. Oldest of 17.
Boy. Okay.
17 children.
Okay.
I think part of them died.
Several of them died. You know, there's
there's actually that many.
Two girls. Let's see. We've got one girl left, haven't we, now?
Yes.
Elrose. My sister, one oldest sister, died last spring, next mm-hmm. January.
Mm-hmm.
And I had brother died last fall, and one died 4 years before that. And when I had a little girl died up here in the holler, she died. She's about 3 years old.
Yeah,
there's several of them left.
Four boys and one girl left, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So how many brothers did you have?
Well, there were 10 boys and 6 girls.
That was all the
they didn't all
single
live
marriage.
Didn't all live to.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just one single marriage.
Yeah. Oh, was he married but more than one?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that's what I meant.
My mother had 17 children.
Yeah.
They're all single births. There wasn't no twins.
Uh-huh. And what, I know you're the oldest boy, but you were the number what in the line? You know,
well,
oldest?
The ones that lived to sister older than me. Okay. Had one sister older than me that died in 1918 flu epidemic. The one died in the flu epidemic. Just like that. They didn't all live to them. And by the way, there was only one died out of her family. It had 13. Her family was 13 and my family was 17.
Ah.
Used to be big families, you know. People have big families.
Well, is there anything else that you can think of that you want to tell me about?
I can think a lot of stuff. But
he can talk all night.
Well, I know. Well, how about if you want to talk some more, we can schedule a sequel here.
Well, I tell you, if I was able to tell you anything else, I'd tell you the story of my wedding, but I better not tell that.
Oh, come on. We got time for the wedding story.
No, you think that.
Yeah, you got to tell the wedding story.
You catch her gone sometime, I'll tell you.
Get her gone.
It was awful.
I don't know.
You've turned that off?
No, I haven't yet.
Well, we'll give you that wedding on that.
Oh, okay.
No, you don't.
I don't need the wedding on it. You can laugh about it if you want to. Don't want it wrote down.
One of the things, I would love to get some copies of some of these pictures that you've got for the Oral History Commission.
Well,
is there any way we could figure out how to do that?
I've got a book. There's a history of it. Helen, look right there in that thing. See if they want them history books right there. It's got all this stuff in it.
Yeah. He's got all these pictures and stuff in it?
I don't know,
but I haven't seen one right
now. Yeah, it's laying right in there.
There's some. I took a bunch of books in the back.
There's two of them here. I took one. I bought one and they recopied, reprinted them, and when they did reprint them, I bought an extra one and took it down to the library and donated it to the library.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the whole history of it's a history of the unit, whatever they done there.
Mm-hmm.
That letter from the colonel right there that you saw a while ago tells you, that gives you the maps and everything, where we went in Normandy, and site we went in here at Cherbourg and went down the Brest Peninsula. We went in Cherbourg and down across this Cherbourg and went down the Brest Peninsula there ways, and then it shows right here, but several troops. My troop went all the way down, about almost down to the end of it, and come back. Went to Reims, through Le Mans, Fontainebleau, Paris, Nancy, France. Out here, Nancy's where that went from Nancy to Metz. That's where the that Floss pocket where they killed all the Germans there, a whole army of them. Caught them in there, blocked it all, killed a whole bunch of them through Worms.
Did you see them?
I showed her that.
Yeah.
Did you?
Bomberg, back to Nuremberg, and Salzburg. Here's where we ended up, Salzburg, over in Austria. And some of our boys went down through the Alps Mountain and to Italy and then back. Now, my buddy Rex Gayhart down here next door, his pictures on these things are. He was a gunner on a tank, and they took the tank battalion on down there. Had a little uprise, and they went down there, they straightened that out, and then they come back.
Mm-hmm. And is Mr. Gayhart still alive?
Died about 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
There's my colonel's. That's his picture.
Mm-hmm.
And Chapter 1, Normandy. Chapter 2, the run through France. Chapter 3, the Pro-Oil Force. I didn't tell you anything about that. And then the winter campaign. And Chapter 5 says the end, and glossary, and commendations, and apex. And that's where you find the pictures in there. That's the story about it there. And then over here, some of these other places we went through. It's some more maps, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's got it all in there, but there's your pictures start right here.
If I had known about what kind of pictures you wanted, I wouldn't have put those away.
Because then the salt gun's fire. We have that salt gun was a tank chassis with a 75 millimeter gun on it. Lobbed the shells out there. And all them pictures round through there, you got.
Okay. Would you mind if I borrowed this book for and got some.
I don't know how well I can trust you. There ain't never another book like that.
We've got two of those.
Don't tell her that.
We've got two. And I think that was the first one we bought.
No, that's the latest. I think that's the new one.
Do they have a place where you can buy these?
No.
Okay.
We had them printed, and they give us each man one, and then about 10 years ago we had a reprint of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could buy them. It's a reprint for $50.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought one. I bought that one, and I bought an extra one to give it to the library.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But, because I don't think there's any way, you know, that I can. I brought my digital camera so I could take a picture of you guys. But I don't know that I can get, you know, good pictures of your photographs, and those are some really wonderful photos that you've got.
I got a big one I'm taking with me. This, it's a picture of it in there. Picture of it in here. I just find it.
Is the big one upstairs?
The big one, we had it for last down at that Jeep. I'm featuring it with the Jeep. We're going to take that Jeep over to this parade. Mm-hmm. And set it over for people to look at, and then we've got this big picture, 4x8 picture,
mm-hmm.
Very big enough, covers the whole wall. Picture of the Jeep. I'll show you a picture of it over here in a minute.
Where right all here. The people in that thing.
This one right here. See two German prisoners on the front of it.
Uh huh.
That's the way I had when I met.
When you met Patton.
I had one of them. There's a bar stands up in front of that, and they sit there and hold that bar. You can see the end of it sticking up above their head.
Uh-huh. Now, is a copy of that picture in this book?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all in there.
All right.
And this one right here, yeah, I'm quite sure it's in there. And this, well, we take that Jeep and we set up and we'll set that picture up right beside it where you can see it and look at the Jeep or look at the picture mm-hmm. here. And when I get back, I'm going to put it. There's a restaurant down here. It's got all of the GIs they can find this county pictured in there. So,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take that and put it on the wall and look at it down there.
Okay. Well, if there's not anything else that you can think of to tell me, then we'll.
You don't want to hear that wedding.
I probably do, but I don't know that you're going to tell me. So,
Rex and his wife, when they.